You're listening to a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, dedicated to bringing podcasters together for the greater good of gaming. It's sort of like Voltron, but with better lip syncing. Find out more at dicetowernetwork.com.
Welcome to the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 246.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Andrew, and I am joined by my lovely and wonderful wife, Anitra.
That's me.
And cold wife, Anitra. It's cold. It's cold today.
Yeah, I thought we were all done with spring up here in Massachusetts, and we had moved straight into summer, and then the weather came back and went, ha 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 ha, yeah, Memorial Day plans? Who needs Memorial Day plans? Rain and cold.
5 degrees rain. Outside right now.
It's cold. More rain.
Yeah, it's cold outside. Welcome to the show, everybody. We have a fun and interesting topic to talk about this week. But first, let's talk about how the Family Gamers Podcast is sponsored by First Move Financial.
Let's face it, life is a resource management game. We have so much fun sitting around the table and plotting use of resources in games like Power Grid or Terraforming Mars. Why is it so stressful in real life to manage our resources? It doesn't have to be. Resource management in real life follows many of the same principles, but because we're in it, it's harder to see. It helps to have an outside advisor in those cases, and that's what First Move Financial can do for you. For expert help applying some of the same principles that help you take down your friends in Agricola, head over to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers today to schedule a call.
Thank you so much, First Move Financial, for sponsoring this episode of the show.
So you've got a fact for 246.
Of course I have a fact about the number 246. This week's fact comes from the Annals of U.S. Military History.
Okay. Right.
The USS Croaker, like frog.
Like Frog Croaker.
Like Frog Croaker, is a Gato-class submarine. It was the first ship of the United States Navy to be named for the Croaker, any of various fishes which make throbbing or drumming noises. Apparently not the last one, but the first one.
All right, sure.
The thing that I thought was really cool about this was that the USS Croaker was originally commissioned in 1944 to kind of help out with the end of World War II. But it got decommissioned and then recommissioned again, and then recommissioned again, and then recommissioned again. And finally, the last commissioning of this submarine was in 1971. Well, it wasn't commissioned at that point. It was reclassified a miscellaneous unclassified submarine, IXSS 246, in December of 1971. So it's got a kind of an interesting and unique history in the sense that it has all these different patrols, and it was commissioned under slightly different, I guess, commissions, right? It was the USS Croaker, SS 246, SSK 246, AGSS 246, and then the IXSS 246. So I admit, I don't know a whole lot about what all these different kinds of commission things means. I'm sure they have special meanings, and if somebody is a big fan of naval history, I'm sure you could write to us and let us know. But it was kind of cool. It was a funny name, and I just think submarines are like the coolest things ever. So
submarines are very cool, and also very claustrophobic.
Indeed. We have the opportunity, because we're in Massachusetts, there's the Battleship Cove. Have you ever been to Battleship Cove?
No, but I mean, I've been to other decommissioned naval ships and seen inside them.
Yeah, so they have a battleship, a destroyer, and a submarine there. Mm-hmm. Or at least they did when I was in Boy Scouts, way back in the before times. And yeah, we got to go in and check them out, which was really, really cool. But anyway, so that was my fact about the number 246, the USS Croaker.
Cool. Well, let's give a little preview of what this week's episode is going to be about. We are going to talk about our tips for playing board games that have app integration.
Mm-hmm.
We found that this has become more and more common over the last really just 2 or 3 years. And we figured that especially talking about playing these sorts of games as a family, there might be some aspects of these that you haven't considered before. So we came up with some tips to help you out.
Yep. Yeah, I think we'll talk a little bit about the history of app support for board games, or really where that all came from. And we'll kind of list a couple of games that we've played that we really enjoyed that take advantage of this kind of thing. And then, yeah, some tips and tricks that we learned or figured out or ended up researching after the fact and wishes that we knew when we played app-supported board games that we think would be helpful for you. And one of the reasons, by the way, that we're talking about this is because they are growing more and more in popularity, and there's some really kid-focused board games coming out pretty soon that have some app integration as well. And so this is the right time to talk about this and get some of these things out there.
All right. But first, let's talk about what we've been playing.
Let's do that.
So I'm going to go way back. I don't think last week we talked about playing Mass Transit.
Gosh, I don't know. I mean, that was a long time ago that
I know.
We played it, and it didn't make the list, I guess.
I think so. So I wanted to talk about that one a little bit first. This is a cooperative game where you are trying to lay down mass transit routes for 6 little commuters to get from the big city to their homes in the suburbs. You end up with this kind of starburst or asterisk on the table of cards coming out from the central hub, which is the big city. And it's really interesting, after I learned how to play the game and, you know, felt like I understood what was going on, every game since then, we've been really close to winning, but never quite made it there, which feels like exactly the right balance. It makes me want to keep coming back and saying, maybe we can do it next time. Maybe the luck will be different. Maybe we can make it work.
Well, and I don't even think some of it is luck. I mean, I know that usually the first time you play, you make all the mistakes, right?
Right,
but
right.
The first time we played, we realized, oh, these cards that we thought were kind of throwaway cards, that you need every single one
of them. Yes, yes.
And this is definitely a game where it doesn't feel at the beginning like you're super restricted on resources, but
you
in reality,
really are.
You are super restricted on resources. And when I say resources, what I'm really talking about is cards that enable you to transport in some way or another.
Yeah. So there are 5 kinds of cards overall. There are walking cards. There are bus cards. There are train cards. There are ferry cards. And bus, train, and ferry are these little lines that you're building out. But then there's also a 5th kind of card that you can't use for transportation at all. And most of them also have a little exclamation point that says, oh, by the way, after you draw this card, you have to lay it down this turn. And all of them put stops and gum up the works of your other lines. So balancing out how to make all of that work is the real challenge here.
So this is a really nice small box game from Calliope Games.
Mm-hmm.
It's 2 decks of cards inside the box. It's really 1 deck, but they have to split it to get it into this tiny box. And it's a couple of board pieces that go together almost like a puzzle. I think it's super fun. I think it's a really nice, tight, quick game.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't take that long to play. It's cooperative, so there's really no antagonistic perspective going on at all. This is a nice kind of wind-down game at the end of a night. I don't think this is a good game to like bring to a restaurant or something like that.
No, it ends up taking
a lot of
space.
It's not that you have a ton of stuff on the table, but because you have to start in the middle and you have these spokes coming out, it just kind of covers a lot of real estate. So it's not really good for that kind of an approach. Or
yeah.
Even though it's a small box game, it's not really a good game to play while traveling. It might be okay for playing like on a bed at a hotel after somewhere because it fits into just about any package. But this is not a good travel game. It's not a good restaurant game or anything like that. But it is a nice game, and it's not really brain-burning, even though you definitely have to be careful and deliberate about what you're doing.
Yeah, I'd agree. We'll certainly be playing it more and reviewing it in a little while.
Mm-hmm.
Asher and I played Tumbletown from Weird Giraffe Games.
I'm kind of jealous about this, actually.
So I will say 2 main things about this. This game is really cool. You are building a little Western Main Street out of dice, which is a really fun idea, and I really like the way it works out. Secondly, there are a lot of rules, but like a lot of other games I've played from Weird Giraffe, once you kind of begin to synthesize it all, everything clicks, and you're like, oh, I do this, and then I do this, and then I do this, and it all makes sense.
So, you mentioned this to me when you first told me that you played this game, and I have really been thinking about this, because I don't have a sense that Weird Giraffe games are particularly complicated, but there always seems to be lots of rules.
And yeah, exactly.
I wonder, and I've talked about how I really like this in some other games, like Funko, I think, does this and does this extremely well. I think they did it in Funkoverse, where there's a ton of rules in Funkoverse, but after 2 pages, they say, okay, stop. Stop reading the rule books. Go play the game. If you have a question, we have the answer for you in the rule book, we promise. Just go play the game and have some fun. And I kind of wonder, like, is this something that maybe just restructure your rule book and it's going to make it a lot more approachable for people.
Maybe, but weird draft games in general tend to be the kind of games where you're moving towards an end point and then everybody's going to count up points. Mm-hmm. So you need to know from the beginning some idea of like what's going to get you points. So I think rather than say like, hey, you should set up the rule book this way, I think almost more of a onboarding tutorial turn as you see in a game like Wingspan.
Right, right. Yeah, the Quick Start Guide in Wingspan, by the way, it might be one of those innovations that should come to all board games.
Yeah, so Tumbletown is definitely a game that would benefit from that, of like, here is how you take your first two turns or something like that. Sure, like, sure. Do this setup. Here's how you do your first two. Now you know everything there is to know. Go to it.
Okay, that's fair. Maybe a little bit of like, just be aware these are the things you're going to want to have at the end of the game.
Yeah, pretty much.
Something like that. Okay, I can get behind that.
And not to cast shade on them in any way, but I found it really weird that both in the rulebook and in the video I looked up, referenced in the rulebook, it never actually told you anywhere that you're building with the dice directly on your playmat. I had to figure that out after reading the rulebook like twice. Like, my playmat is the street and I'm building on the streets.
Okay.
So that was just a weird oversight. It's one of those, like, as soon as you've seen the game in play, makes perfect sense.
Yeah, like the people that did the video and wrote the rulebook had played the game, so it didn't really occur to them that that was something that somebody wouldn't know kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. So let's see. So we have been starting to be able to see new friends again, or not new friends, old friends again.
Old friends. Doing the same old things.
Yeah,
it's
now
great.
That we have gotten our shots and we're starting to be a little bit more comfortable with actually hanging out with people and stuff. And we got to play a game of Match 5.
Man, I am really enjoying this. It fits nicely sort of in an in-between space of it's on the more cerebral end of party games while still being very much just like a party word game.
Match 5, to me, is like a combination of medium and anti-scategories.
Yes, exactly.
So you have 5 dice, and then all of the permutations of ways in which those 5 dice can be combined.
Mm-hmm.
And for each combination of each pair of dice, you have to come up with a word.
Well, you would like to come up with a word.
You're supposed to come up with a word. And so you have 2 minutes to do them all. At the end of that 2 minutes, everybody compares. And if people match, you get extra points.
Simply having a word that everybody agrees, like, yeah, that works.
Okay, that's legit.
Gets you
that's
a point.
Fine. That passes the sniff test. And if you match with somebody, you get extra points. And that's pretty much the game.
Yeah.
That's it. It's a fun party game. It's medium in the sense that you're taking these two disparate things and trying to put them together, but it's categories in every other way except for the fact that you actually want to match
you
people.
You
want to
match
instead
people.
Of
right.
Not, wanting to not match them.
Right.
So it's nice. It's fun. It's pretty straightforward. I think the review for that is going to be coming out pretty soon. We're actually going
to
write that.
Yeah, in part because there's not a whole lot to see in Match 5. So I figured writing about it is more helpful than taking video of it.
Right. You know what game there is a lot that you can see is Blockness.
Yes. I have been having so much fun playing Blockness. Mm. We should have a snap review out for that in a week. But I will tell you right now, this is a great puzzly kind of game. It's got a high toy factor, like all the pieces are plastic and you're setting them up on this grid and you're going over other people's pieces. And it's simple enough that a 6 or 7 year old can play and win. But there's enough there that you're not going to be bored. Like, you would not mind sitting down and playing this with just adults because it's got a deep strategic spatial puzzle to it.
Right. We haven't had a whole lot of luck with games kind of like this, where there's pieces that come apart and go back together and come apart and go back together. And I'll be honest with you, there have been some component kind of concerns that we've had with some blue-orange stuff in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really happy with Blockness and the way those pieces have been used throughout lots and lots of plays. And they seem pretty fine, even though the board is cardboard and it's a grid of holes, which would, you know, mm-hmm. you would think would make it weaker. I haven't really even seen any problems with that either. So
nope.
I'm pretty happy with the component quality here, which is one of the biggest concerns I had.
There will probably be a shot in the video of one of our kids trying to stick the tail on their sea serpent and it popping off and flying away. It does happen sometimes. Sometimes things get stuck and don't want to come apart when they should or don't stick together like they should. but not so much that it impairs your enjoyment of the game or makes it harder to play. It just kind of like quick pause. Okay, let's deal with that and move on. What else? Oh, man, we got a lot of potential review game plays in over the past week. I also played some Camp Pinetop with our son Asher. He very much enjoyed it. I am looking forward to playing it, especially with more players, because this is a game where it's got a little bit of that area control kind of aspect to it. You can get bonuses if other people have to come through your space that you're on. And, you know, you're trying to get these merit badges. And the whole game is about leveling up in the scouts. What would you call it? Gaining ranks in the scouts through getting merit badges
and stuff. I just like this game because there's kind of a slow crescendo to it, because as you get all these merit badges, you get more powers and you can do more stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, that makes it really fun, right? Everybody likes to play a game and get more powerful and stuff like that. And I think this game does a really good job of that.
I agree. Also been playing some Lucky Numbers.
A lot of Lucky Numbers.
Kind
this
of
game
a lot.
Been a hit.
Yeah. You will have a snap review for that in the break.
In the break of this show. That's right.
All right.
Probably don't have to talk about that much more, right?
No, I think we can move on from there.
We went old school. We played some Baron Park, the Bad News Bears expansion with the monorails. We did the monorail stuff, not the Grizzly stuff.
Yeah.
So you, I think, pasted us in that.
I did well.
Yeah.
I will also point out that this is part of the ongoing trend of our daughter seeing that the boys have gone to bed and being like, mom and dad seem a little annoyed, but I don't want to just go to my room. Hey, mom and dad, will you play a game with me? If I pull out this board game, will you play with me so I can stay up?
That child.
She knows the right thing to do, and it works. And that's why we played Baron Park with her.
That's right. Last night was my guys' game night. We played more Pandemic Legacy. We won by the skin of our teeth again in the month of June. So we are about halfway through the game now. We also played some Fleet the Dice game because that's what we do.
I got to play Fleet the Dice
you
game with you.
Joined in on that one.
And won.
Absolutely pasted us again. And then today we played Tidal Blades with the Angler's Cove expansion. We're getting this one ready for a written review on Monday, which will be the same day this podcast comes out.
I gotta say, with Tidal Blades, I like it. It's a fun game, but it feels like too much.
There's a lot. Yes.
For me, from my perspective, it just feels like too much of everything. Too many pieces, too much setup, too much teardown, takes too long. And all of that saying, like, I still enjoy playing it. It's just too much for a family game, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, we have the retail edition. We don't have the deluxe. And I do kind of wonder why they still went with all the separate pieces for all the boards. Because, I mean, you can get a pretty good size board
into a box that size,
that small. I mean, the box isn't small, but, you know, whatever. And, I mean, heck, we even saw this with Pebble Rock Delivery Service, right? I mean, that board is huge.
Yeah.
And it's one board. But you can do one of those, like, six-fold board things, like in Pandemic, and it would be fine. And I do kind of wonder, I guess, a little bit about why they opted to go with all the separate boards. I get it in the deluxe. I totally understand. It's extra. It's extra. That's what it is. It's extra.
Yeah.
But I do feel like even something that small would have made it feel less overwhelming when you're putting it on the table, because you just go, and the whole board is there. And maybe there's like one extra piece or something like that. I don't know. The other thing, and I'll talk about this in the review, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, is with a game like Taverns of Tiefenthal, when that game came out, one of the cool things about that is, it's got all these different modules, and there's different pieces that you can play with or not. You don't have to, whatever. And I really, really wish that was what happened with Tidal Blades, and maybe you probably couldn't do it with like all the places the judge goes to, but you could probably do it with the monsters and with Angler's Cove. So you could probably have a couple of small rule adjustments that mean that the monsters aren't there, and you're just going through the tryouts kind of mode of the game.
Just call it, you know, Tidal Blades in training.
So whatever. Yeah, just don't have the monster mode or something, you know, something to that effect. Because I think that it's one of those things where, for me, I didn't find it particularly overwhelming after the first or second play. The first one was rough. But I think really that for some people, it's like, it gets better. You hit peak board game enjoyment saturation. And then when you add one more thing on it, the whole thing just falls down.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, different games strike different people in different ways.
Right.
And it seems like for you, like, you went all the way up to the top, and then you just took one more step. And it not going to say it ruined the experience.
It makes it a little disappointing. It's one of those games where it's like, hey, we could play Tidal Blades. And I'm like, that's the next 4 hours, and 2.5 of it are going to be playing the game. That right away makes me go like, I don't want to.
I'm going to draw an analogy for you. And many of our listeners know I'm a baseball fan. I'm a Red Sox fan. Like, somebody calls me up. My sister calls me up and says, hey, we're going to the Red Sox game. My first thought is, this is going to be awesome. And then I'm like, all right, I got to drive to Boston. I got to deal with Boston traffic. I've got to park my car, either park at the park, which means $50, or I got to park on the tee, and then I have to take the tee in, and I still have to deal with all the people. Plus, I got to pay $75 for the ticket. I'm going to pay $11 for a beer. And it's just like all this stuff piles on, and that experience that's supposed to be so great is like, there's a lot of baggage.
And there are a lot of days where you're just like, you know what? I would love to, but all of the extra stuff that goes along with doing this is too much. Right. I don't want to do it.
And that's not true for everybody. And in a lot of ways, that's not necessarily a reflection on the game. But in some ways, it is a reflection on the game. All that other stuff in the baseball game example, like, that's just the environment that it's in. And a lot of that, like, I mean, the art on that game is, I don't know, a 12 out of 10. Like, I mean, it's absolutely
it's
gorgeous,
great.
Right? And they wanted to do extra, and they did extra, and it kicks butt in a lot of ways. But for some people, it's a little bit too much. And that's why, number one, it's pretty clear that Angler's Cove was developed alongside the rest of the game. I feel like it should have just been in the box. But again, I feel like that's almost cheap to say because there's so much content there. And it's not necessary
for playing the game.
And I understand that. Right. But then at the same time, if there's could have been something, maybe adjusted a little bit, maybe pull the fold out, right? Or something where it's like, you draw a challenge once per round. You just draw one. So the Citadel of Time is gone. You know, something like that. I don't know. Some things that you could almost do like with Isle of Cats, where there's like a family mode. Like, we haven't actually gotten to that yet, but something like that, because I think that that would make it more palatable for people who can't handle all of those pieces and
people
all
like
of
me.
That stuff. And I think that's the only place where I struggle with this game, because the game, the core of the game is rock solid.
Great.
It's really good. It is a dice chucking luck based game with some, you know, some manipulation and stuff, and that's fine. And pairing that up with all of the scaffolding that comes around it, those don't necessarily go together. There's certain types of people that it go together for. People like me, people like our son Asher, people like James Hudson. It goes together for those people, right? And for those people, and there's lots of them, the game is awesome. But it does come with some significant caveats. I think that's all.
Yeah, I agree.
I'll actually expand on that in the review. So
stay tuned, folks.
So definitely head over to thefamilygamers.com. Check that out.
All right. I've got a few more things. Again, with the gaming with girl post-bedtime, we've been pulling out Draftosaurus and Blank and Filler. Cute short games, 20 minutes. I'm good with that. I enjoy these games. She enjoys these games. It works. And with it being a holiday weekend where we actually don't have much of anything planned, I also did a little bit of solo gaming.
I saw.
I know, right? I played some Tempest Imperium, which is going to be a standby, and some Squire for Hire, which is fun, but frustrating, but fun, I guess. Which is the right amount, I think, especially for a solo game. If it was always just like, oh, I'm going to do this thing, and it's kind of puzzly, and it fits together, and that's fine, you'd get tired of it sooner. Both Tempest Imperium and Squire for Hire have that, no, I don't want that to be the first obstacle I have to deal with. That obstacle is terrible. Can't I put it off until the end of the game? No. So those pull me in, and I enjoy doing them. And as everybody should know by now, solo games that are real quick, you know, 10, 15 minutes are my jam. I think that's it. I may have missed a few along the way, but we covered enough.
Yes, we did. So before we go to our break, we are going to talk about For Science.
Yeah. So I'm a little sad that I missed this, but after I realized I missed it, I said, don't tell me anything about it. Tell me on the show.
I will tell you on
my
the
reactions
show.
Will be completely genuine.
All right. So I mentioned before, Friday night is guys game night where we get together and we play Pandemic. And a while ago, I don't know, maybe a month and a half ago, I had texted this group of guys, it's just me and two other guys, and I said, you know, guys, this chicken sandwich battle thing, like that all the fast food companies are doing, like, is legit, because
it was Mother's Day when we ended up going to Burger King.
Well, I had gone to Popeyes a couple of weeks before.
Oh, before that. That's true.
Yeah. And the Popeyes sandwich was really good. And then we went to Burger King, and the Burger King chicken sandwich was really good. Like, really good. And so I was like, all right, guys, whenever it is that we get together next, we need to do, like, a blind chicken sandwich taste test thing. So I managed to get all of my buddies to agree with me. And so before the guys came over, each one of them stopped at different restaurants and picked up chicken sandwiches. And so we had McDonald's, crispy chicken sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
We had Burger King, Wendy's, Chick-fil-A, and we had Popeye's crispy chicken sandwich.
Five chicken sandwiches for three guys.
For three guys. So the plan was originally that you were going to do it, and I was going to be completely unknowing of what they were.
Yeah, and then I was out of the house.
And then you were busy. So the good news is I have very bad short-term memory. So with the exception of one or two, I had completely forgotten what they were anyway. We recorded them all. You know, it was like one through five. I had the, you know, the answer key in the corner or whatever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so we ate each one, and then we kind of discussed them, and we agreed on what we liked or didn't like or whatever. We just kind of talked about it. But then we independently ranked them.
Okay.
So I have all of our ranks right here.
I'm going to assume that either Popeyes or Chick-fil-A was still near the top.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to say, let me tell you this. There was complete agreement on the bottom three.
Okay. I'm going to guess McDonald's was probably the bottom one, because Burger King used to be the worst, and they've revamped it since then.
I think I gave you a bite of my Burger King one. It was really good.
It was delicious,
it was good.
So I'm going to guess McDonald's is the bottom.
Okay, so you guess McDonald's is the bottom.
And then I think Wendy's is also going to be closer to the bottom. Like, it's fine.
Okay.
But between Burger King, Chick-fil-A, and Popeyes, I honestly have no idea. I've had one bite of a Burger King chicken sandwich. I've had Chick-fil-A chicken, but not their sandwich, and I've never had Popeyes, so I literally just don't know.
So I think we all expected McDonald's to be at the bottom.
All right.
We all did, and it wasn't.
Interesting.
Yeah. The bottom one, and this might have been just this one time or whatever, the bottom one was actually Wendy's.
Really?
It was both the chicken was a little overcooked, and I don't want to say rubbery. Like, rubbery makes it sound like I was, you know, chewing on a kid's toy. But it was
not as moist as you'd like.
It wasn't anywhere near. It was tough. And it just looked sad. I have some pictures. We can put the pictures in the show post if you want. It looked really, really sad. So Wendy's was at the bottom for all three of us.
Mm-hmm.
McDonald's was number four.
Okay.
It was okay.
Sure.
Burger King was number three.
Okay. So it really did come down to Chick-fil-A and Popeyes, huh?
It really did. Everybody agreed, like, it was Chick-fil-A and Popeyes, gap, Burger King, gap, McDonald's and Wendy's.
All right. Yeah. All right.
And the gap between Popeyes and Chick-fil-A and then to Burger King was smaller than the gap between Burger King and McDonald's and Wendy's.
So what you're saying is McDonald's and Wendy's are like, if you really have to get a chicken sandwich, go ahead, but any of the other three would be a vastly better choice.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And so two of the three of us voted Chick-fil-A number one and Popeyes number two. And one of us voted Popeyes number one and Chick-fil-A number two.
Okay.
Would you like to guess
who voted Popeyes number one? I'm going to guess it was probably you.
It was me.
I'm so less surprised than you thought.
My ranking on these five chicken sandwiches, and this was a lot of things. It was bun quality. It was bun texture, breading quality.
Mm-hmm.
Breading on the Popeyes, it was just, and fuego. Oh, so good. Flavor of chicken, and then kind of the whole package, right?
Sure.
And ultimately, for me, and maybe this is just a commentary on I don't know, whatever. I think that as this all went down, we pretty much all agreed on all of the high points. But for my buddies Corey and Spencer, the taste of the chicken itself was more important than the taste and the quality of the breading, even though we all agreed that the taste and the quality of the breading was superior on the Popeyes.
Okay.
And so that's why they put Chick-fil-A above Popeyes. For me, it's the other way around. Like, I don't want the chicken to be gross. I want it to be juicy. I want it to be tender, and I want it to have good flavor. But it's all those spices they put in the breading and all that stuff that, like, really makes a fried chicken sandwich a fried chicken sandwich.
Because
if I want the chicken, I'm going to get a grilled chicken sandwich.
Same.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's why I put Popeyes above Chick-fil-A, and that's why they put Chick-fil-A above Popeyes, because they cared more about the flavor of the chicken. And I totally get that. But it was really interesting that we agreed on 3, 4, and 5. And yeah. The reasons why we disagreed on 1 and 2 were...
Matters of taste.
Matters of taste.
Yeah.
Which is what this whole thing is anyway. That and the Chick-fil-A one had cheese on it. Chick-fil-A was the only one that had cheese on it.
That's kind of weird.
I mean, whatever. A lot of them had mayo or something like mayo.
A mayo-like dressing.
Yeah, I prefer just straight mayo, personally. And a lot of them had pickles on them, which is just absolutely whatever. Delightful. Oh, love it. So, as far as I'm concerned, it is Popeyes, Chick-fil-A, Burger King, McDonald's, and then Wendy's.
I will never look at a Wendy's chicken sandwich the same way again.
You know, and that was the conversation that we had. We were like, if you came off the highway and you had a Popeyes and a Wendy's before we did this taste test, 100 times out of 100, you're going to Wendy's. Because you know Wendy's. Wendy's is trustworthy, yeah. Blah, blah, blah. Now? Mm-mm, no way. Not a chance.
Yeah.
Not for a chicken sandwich anyway. I mean, look, their food is good. I've said a lot of times, and I'm not going to back off of it, their junior bacon cheeseburger is the best.
Exactly the right proportions.
Perfect everything.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's a little bit too much lettuce, but that's whatever. Anyway, so that is our chicken sandwich taste test for science.
For science. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we will welcome our new members to the community and talk about our tips for playing board games that use apps.
All right. Sounds good. We'll be right back. So tell me, kids, do you feel lucky? I mean, about numbers. Do you think you've got the lucky numbers? This is a snap review for Lucky Numbers. Fill your garden with clovers and watch your luck grow.
Lucky Numbers is a game of sequencing and luck. It was designed by Michael Schacht, published by Tiki Editions in France, and brought to the USA by Luma Imports. Up to 4 players, ages 8 and up, can play a game in 20 minutes or sometimes less. So Asher, let's talk about the art in this game.
The illustrations by Christine Alcouf are simple but effective. Colorful clovers with golden edges match up precisely with the 16 clover spots on each garden board. The pieces are chunky and easy to pick up and put down.
I love the little ladybug that's on one corner of each board.
I guess this is to show you the orientation the boards are supposed to be in, but really it doesn't actually matter.
Nope, not at all.
So Anitra, let's talk about the mechanics of Lucky Numbers.
The game starts with 4 numbered clovers on your board, going along this diagonal line from the top left to the bottom right.
On your turn, you may either take a face-down clover from the middle of the table, or take a face-up clover that someone else has discarded. Then place that clover somewhere in your grid.
You can put it in an empty space, or you can exchange it for a clover already in your grid. Any exchanged or discarded clover is placed face up for all the players to see.
So your goal in Lucky Numbers is to create 4 rows and 4 columns of ascending numbers. Whenever you place a number, it must be larger than any numbers to the left in its row or above in its column, and smaller than any numbers to the right in its row or below it in its column. You win the game by being the first player to fill all 16 spaces on your board.
If you'd like to play Lucky Numbers solo, there are 40 puzzles in the book that you can play. You swap adjacent pairs of clovers to get all the rows and columns to show ascending numbers.
You can also swap clovers on opposite ends of the board.
So Andrew, let's talk about what we expected coming into this game.
Lucky Numbers looks like a very simple game. I mean, the art kind of caught our eye. I have some Irish heritage, so of course I liked that. And sequencing games are generally pretty easy to learn and to teach to kids. Now, we had some experience with Lucky Numbers through its implementation on Board Game Arena, which is very good. So this influenced some of our assumptions coming into the game. We knew it was a good, you know, drop-in, drop-out experience with perfect information. There's really nothing that's ever hidden when you're playing the game.
We also knew, both from the name of the game and the theme and the simple mechanics, that luck was going to be a major factor here. This is really important to know going in, so you don't expect lots of strategy and just end up with bad luck instead.
Just looking at the game, I wasn't very excited about it because it's basically just placing these tiles with numbers on them on these small boards.
Ah, but Asher, you were actually surprised when you played Lucky Numbers, right?
Yeah. Once we played, I discovered that I really liked the game. It moves quickly and doesn't overwhelm you with decisions. Because it was so easy to pick up and put down, nobody felt like they had to keep a bunch of information in their heads.
And like we said, we actually had tried Lucky Numbers on Board Game Arena before we played it in person. We were actually surprised that it moved just as quickly on a real table as it did when a computer was handling all the fiddly bits for you.
That was a very pleasant surprise. Our last surprise is that this game offered a great new way for us to talk about probability and how you can shape your luck by placing numbers in such a way that you leave room for a greater range of numbers in your empty spaces.
Teaching this kind of opportunity planning is a very valuable trait, especially in board gaming. So it was really helpful for it to be so simple to see here.
Lucky Numbers is a compact game that moves fast and hits all the right puzzly kind of notes. It's a light game that feels light. It's really easy to set up and play. It would be nice if there was a cloth bag or something, so we didn't need to space out the pieces and make sure everything was face down. But this was probably left out for cost reasons. Lucky Numbers is available for $20 or less. We love the quick gameplay, the opportunity to teach some probability and deductive reasoning, and the approachability for kids as young as 8, maybe even a little bit younger. So, Asher, what do you think we should rate Lucky Numbers?
I think we should give it 4 clovers out of 5.
And that's Lucky Numbers
in a snap.
And we're back.
Yeah, so before we get into our show topic, one thing that we were originally doing every week, it slowed down a little bit, so we're going to do it every other week these days, I think.
Maybe.
Is welcome our new members to the Family Gamers community. We've got a couple of posts in the community that it's welcoming those new members, and I really like these because they really encourage people to kind of talk about what brought them to the community and maybe their gaming situation at home, and maybe encourage them to ask some questions if that would be something that they need. So we want to welcome to the community 7 new members.
Yeah. We would like to welcome Mary Sizemore,
Marie Eckel,
Barbara Franklin,
Tammy Polanski,
Casey Pothoff,
Christina Vanderzil,
and Roman Khan.
Welcome to the Family Gamers community. We hope that you are also listening to the podcast so that you can hear your names called out and hear about the interesting things that we talk about. Or at least we think they're interesting.
I hope you do too. Thanks again for joining, and if this sounds interesting to you, you could always join the Family Gamers community. Go to facebook.com/groups/FamilyGamersAA.
And now, on to the topic.
All right. So, there has been a huge growth in board games that have app integration in the last couple of years.
Yep. And, I mean, there's only going to be more of it, right? So, when we think back to where this kind of all started from, in terms of actually apps, it really started with, like, helper apps.
So accessories.
Like, yeah, accessories. Like Chawazi. I think Chawazi actually came later, but it's just an app that you use to pick who's going to go first.
Yeah.
in a game. Or like token trackers. I remember, I think the first time I ever saw someone use like an app on their phone to do something, I think I was playing Magic, and they put a little app up that looked like a super fancy life tracker, and they would just tap plus minus on it, and it would track their life. And like that's sure. How this stuff started. But really, that's not how this stuff really started. Years and years ago, we had these specialty electronic things that came in our board game boxes.
Oh, yeah. Like Mall Madness, like Stop Thief, like Dark Tower.
Yes, exactly. I mean, these weren't digital things that were encased in the computer that masquerades as your phone. But that's essentially what these things were. They were the same thing. You couldn't play the game without a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But they were necessary and in many cases provided a more engaging experience.
Well, and this sort of thing still exists now, but it's becoming rarer because it's so much easier to make a mobile app.
Well, and so when we really start to dig into this topic, we're almost kind of talking about apps that help out with like hobby board games. Because I think in the kind of mainstream Walmart, Target, non-hobby board game stuff, you do still see some of it. Like Mall Madness was re-released with
right. A
big chunk of plastic in it.
There's been some kind of Monopoly where you scan an ATM card. There's Heist, which we really enjoy.
Right. And that's a physical thing. But for that, I mean, it's almost a dexterity game at the same time.
Right.
So some of these things do still exist. We also have used things like BG Stats. We use BG Stats for all of our gameplays and all of our tracks. We wouldn't be able to do the what have we been playing part of the show if we didn't have BG Stats on our phones. But we are absolutely seeing apps replacing the plastic things. Stop Thief is a game you mentioned. The re-release of Stop Thief has an app instead of a plastic thing. And over time, they actually enhanced the app to add more functionality into the game without really needing to change the physical components of the game. And that's something that's really great about this app stuff.
But we're also seeing it in games like the Unlock series of puzzles where you need the app to make this card game work.
Right. Or even in the Holiday Hijinks series. We just had Jonathan Chaffer on the show last week, and he's the one who has created these games published by Grand Gamers Guild. They use a website, so it's not an app, but it has some styling that kind of makes it feel app-like. But they use a website to provide some of the clues or to provide a little bit more background information because they have 18 cards. So, you know, this is something Jonathan talked about on the show last week. So there are a lot of these kinds of things. There's even games like Last Defense, which we reviewed last year from Funko, which really drives the entire narrative, air quote, of the game through this app that basically tells you what to do. It's a timer that's ticking down and you're trying to do as many moves as you can in between instructions that the game is giving you.
I think it makes sense to draw a little bit of a demarcation though, because Last Defense, you absolutely need the specific app, which is a timer, but a whole lot more than a timer. There are other games where it's nice to use the thematic timer app, but really you could just use any timer. The exit games, 5-Minute Dungeon and 5-Minute Marvel, Panic Island, which we reviewed a while back, all of these, they have thematic timers if you want to use them, but you don't need them at all.
Yeah, I think those are basically publishers kind of dipping their toe in the water and getting that process started and, you know, maybe getting some metrics on who's actually using those kinds of things, right?
Sure.
Stuff like that. But we saw a couple of years ago, Lucky Duck released Chronicles of Crime.
And oh, this, man, the app for that was cool.
This was the first game. I mean, there was app integration before that, and there has been different kinds of app integration afterwards. But this is the first game that I played where I was like, whoa, this is legit. Like, this is 100% deep integration. You cannot play this game without this app. Everything in the game has a QR code on it. You're scanning QR codes. It's giving you interviews, and it's doing all the stuff. You're looking at crime scenes on the phone or on the device. I mean, it's incredibly, incredibly integrated. And it's been wildly popular. And there's been a lot of other mysteries and stories and stuff like that in that Chronicles of Crime universe, which is really just a testament to how well-received it was.
There's going to be a kids version coming.
There is. And that's actually one of the big reasons why I wanted to talk about this week. There's two reasons. One of them is there is a Kids Chronicles game coming later this year. I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about it, so I'm not going to, but I think it's going to be awesome. When more information is made public, we'll be able to talk about it. I'm really looking forward to this game. It's going to be a lot of fun. The other game that they were sharing a lot of information about at the same time with some press people was Destinies. Destinies is a game that is really getting fulfilled right now, and I think some press people are getting their hands on Destinies, which is a narrative, app-driven dark adventure. It looks just absolutely incredible. I encourage you, Google Lucky Duck Destinies just to see what this game is and see some of the amazing stuff. So Lucky Duck has always had experience in software stuff. And that's one of the reasons why this is something that they're really forging ahead on. But anyway, all of this stuff coming together brought this topic to a head. And I felt like this was the right time for us to talk about it on the show. And really, how can you play these kinds of games, or what are some tricks that'll make playing these kinds of games a little bit less stressful in a family environment? And these are true really for any group environment, but especially in a family where everything can be going great, but there's that one thing that annoys one of your kids and it just messes everything up.
So, and it snowballs.
Yeah, this is the sandpaper to smooth things out to make sure that everything goes as well as it possibly can. So we talked about a bunch of games that we've played that we've really enjoyed. Now we have 5 tips for you for playing app-integrated board games.
So our first tip would be to screen share. There are tons of ways to do this, but pretty much every mobile phone has some way to take what's on the phone and put it up on a bigger screen of some sort, whether that's AirPlay or I think it's called Chromecast if you have an Android phone.
Well, Chromecast is a thing you plug into the TV, so you're casting to the device, yeah, but whatever it's called.
There's all kinds of ways to do this. And if you've never tried it with your phone for anything, I highly recommend it. There are a lot of great things about being able to do that. Not just for board gaming purposes either.
Yeah, so the thing about this that's so important is that when we say share your screen, we don't mean everybody crowd around your small device.
Oh yes, please, no.
Don't do that. do not do that. Because everybody's going to want to see, because depending on what's going on, since it's all driven by one app, there's only one thing really going on at a time. And everybody's going to want to know what that thing is. So the best way to do this, obviously if there's certain games where things have to be private, that's not possible. But the best way to do this is to cast whatever you're seeing on your screen onto a bigger device.
If you're not so sure about doing that, think about what other larger screen you might have available. When we first started playing app-assisted board games, we were actually using an iPad a lot of the time because we had a stand. We could set it up at the end of the table and everybody could see it. Now I would probably go back and say, let's do the casting to a TV or a larger monitor or whatever. But again, if you don't feel comfortable with that, a lot of apps can run on computers and things. So if you want to, you know, drag over a monitor or a laptop or something like that, that could work too. To just have a little bit more space, everybody can have some idea of what's going on the screen.
And that gets into our second point, which is prepare. So we've talked about this in the context of rule books before. Like, it's probably helpful if you read a rule book and figure out how to play a game before you attempt to teach a game. That just seems like it makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, when we're adding this extra element of technology, it makes sense to figure that out beforehand too, because I mean, I think we've all been watching someone struggle with a technical problem and been kind of overcome with that, like, just give it to me, I'll fix the problem kind of feeling, right? And everybody kind of goes through this. And nobody wants to do that when you're trying to sit down and have fun. We're going to have fun around this table tonight. It's going to be a good time. You're going to be happy when it's over. And you can't have ice cream until everybody laughs. Right? You know what I mean?
Yes.
Probably had a little bit too much truth in it, but
we're all gonna make eye contact
and smile and love each other. Don't forget to love each other. But seriously, mess around with the app beforehand. It's just like reading a rule book.
Try out the casting to your TV or whatever.
And figure out kind of what you want that to be, whether you want to use a TV, whether you want to use a larger device. Maybe you have an iPad Pro in your house. That screen is huge. Just use that instead. These kind of things.
Yeah.
And this actually gets into our third topic, which is consider your environment.
Yeah, since doing a board game with an integrated app, it brings a completely different feel to playing the game. You may actually need to modify the way you play and where you play to make it work. If you're putting it up on a TV, like we said earlier, maybe you can't have everybody physically sit around a dining room table and also have the TV. Maybe you can do a coffee table, or if you have younger kids like we do, maybe you're all going to sit on the floor and cast it up to the TV.
Or maybe your game room doesn't have a TV in it.
Yeah. Right?
I can very easily see scenarios where sitting in someone's really super awesome game room with 1,700 Kallax shelves and 47,000 games, there isn't room for a TV. And so now you're limited to your ability to play an app-integrated board game and actually share what's going on. That's a problem. And these are the kinds of things that you need to think about when you're trying to bring this dimension into your gaming.
You know what else is a problem? If you forget to charge your phone or device ahead of time.
Listen, I have an iPhone 8. It's like 3 or 4 years old. By the end of the day, I'm not going to want to run an app-integrated game because my phone is toast.
So it is toast, but that means that if you're thinking about playing an app-integrated game, make sure that your phone is charged ahead of time, or make sure you can do it somewhere where the phone can stay plugged in while you're playing. You really need to put this extra little bit of thought in ahead of time to make sure that everything's going to run smoothly and work the way you intend it to.
Yeah, I mean, look, you're adding technology to a board game, cardboard and paper experience. It's just another dimension or vector that you have to contend with. And that's really what these three points are getting at.
On the flip side, what you're playing is still a board game or a card game. It may be app enhanced, but you're still interacting with the other players around the table and whatever cardboard or tokens or whatever that you have in front of you. Don't lose yourself in the app. Forget the screen if you can. Maybe you try this out on TV is too much, because if your kids are like ours, it's just like, oh, there's things on the big screen. What? What? There's something else going on anywhere else in the house? I wouldn't know. The TV is on.
It's possible. It's something where you do need to kind of be mindful of what's going on. But remember, this is an app integrated or an app enhanced board game. And we've talked many times about why we play board games. And the social experience is a huge part of why we play board games. If we wanted family video game time, we would play video games.
Yeah, we would play Mario Kart or Smash Brothers or something like that.
Right. Especially since this is an app integrated experience, you're only going to have one app running. You can only really have one person interacting with that app at a time. Don't be that person who forgets everything else.
Speaking of one app running at a time, that gets us into our fifth and final point. It's going to be most effective if one person stays in control of the app for most games.
This is so tricky because obviously we teach our kids to share. Right?
And taking turns is good.
And taking turns is good. But sometimes the process of sharing can become overwhelming and can take people out of the experience of just trying to have fun because you've got to now manage the mechanics of what is equitable. So what we very strongly recommend, you know, depending on the game, sometimes the person controlling the app pretty much needs to be a parent. It might not be feasible, especially if you have younger kids. This is the part that mom or dad just does. It's not a discussion. It just does. But there's a lot of games like Stop Thief, for example, that can be controlled by anyone as long as they're not like two, right?
Yeah.
Surprisingly enough, even though different people have opportunities to interact with an app over the course of a game, it's actually easiest if one person drives the app. So in a case of something like Stop Thief, you don't have to hand the phone or the device or the whatever all over the table.
I mean, you can.
But someone else can drive. And yeah. This is especially valuable if you're sharing that screen.
Mm-hmm.
Because now you don't have to be like, see what I'm doing? Okay, I'm clicking this. Okay, I'm going to do this now, or I'm going to do that. Or hand off the phone. Maybe it's your phone and you just don't feel comfortable giving your phone to someone else and having them mess around with it.
Mm-hmm.
They're still seeing the screen. They can tell, okay, no, I want to do this. Okay, here's the code to put in. But one person is driving. This isn't about controlling the flow of the game. This is about interacting with that device. And maybe this is that technical person or that more technical person who's going to be a little bit savvier about this. Maybe game time involves your grandma and she is grandma. I mean, not all grandmas are good with technology. In fact, most probably aren't.
Most probably aren't. Right? I mean, your mom's pretty good. But
and so it just kind of makes everyone's life easier if you're not defaulting to, it's your turn, here's the device. It's your turn, here's the
mm-hmm,
device.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It can really take you out of the game. So the best thing to do here, if you are concerned about equity and sharing and all of these things, is to track who did it for that game and change that the next time you play.
Yeah, so especially in a family like ours where there's a bunch of kids and everybody wants their turn, there's going to be fights if a device is getting passed around. Like, no, you just had it. It's my turn. No, nope, we're not even getting there. We'll say, you know what? Oldest, it's your turn to be the app driver this time.
Right.
We're going to write it down so that next time we know it's second to oldest's turn.
Yep. And you can either do that for the particular game or across games.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's for the particular game, you just write it down and you throw that piece of paper in the box with the game. And if it's across games, you keep it on the fridge or something like that. But keeping those turns a little bit more abstract outside of the individual game is just going to smooth the process over a ton. It just makes it easier.
Mm-hmm.
So those are kind of some general tips that we have. I mean, they can apply to a lot of different things. In this context, we're talking obviously about app-integrated board games, and we hope that they've been helpful. If you've got thoughts on what you think really helped an experience that you had with an app-driven game, I mean, look, having a TV in the table, like that's pretty cool, but that's not something that the average family is going to be like, oh, sure, I'll just install a television in my dining room table.
Yeah,
like,
that's certainly
that's
not
really where I'm at.
That's certainly not our reality.
Yeah, that's not even when I build a gaming table, I'm not putting a TV in it, or at least I'm not intending to unless something changes.
Oh, my.
But anyway, what kinds of things have you done? Maybe there's something else that we didn't include on our list. There's lots of ways that you can let us know.
You can find us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and now TikTok.
Oh, I can't believe we're doing TikTok.
I know, right? At Family Gamers AA.
So speaking of that, we should talk about this very, very briefly. The reason why we joined TikTok is because we're trying to be young, hip, modern people. No.
No. No.
This is a continuation of kind of our YouTube snap review experiment.
Yeah, just trying to come up with other ways that make video make sense for what we do here in our family.
Right. We're hoping that our TikTok videos are going to be entrees into the other content that we're already producing for the Family Gamers. If there's anything that you kind of would like to see on that platform, let us know. Again, you can find us on all of these things at Family Gamers AA.
You can join the discussion in our Family Gamers community. It's on Facebook, but probably the easiest way to get there is to go to thefamilygamers.com/community.
You can also just be old school and email us.
Anitra at thefamilygamers.com.
Andrew at thefamilygamers.com.
You can go really old school and support us like NPR with with merch.
That's right. You can go to thefamilygamers.com/merch to find your Family Gamers or Play Games with Your Kids merchandise.
T-shirts, tote bags,
hoodies,
coffee mugs.
Hoodies.
Yeah.
It's hoodie weather.
Today it is.
Please don't forget to subscribe to the show, tell your friends about the show, and leave us a review at Apple Podcast or whatever your podcast subscription source is. You can also find us on Amazon Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify.
The Family Gamers is sponsored by First Move Financial. Go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to learn how the team at First Move Financial can help you pile up the victory points. Thanks again to First Move Financial for sponsoring this episode of the show.
All right, and I think that's going to do it for us this week. So, until next week, everybody.
Play games with your kids.